following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
Hey, where y'all at?
It is a thrill. I love this show.
You're telling me a big fat lie.
I was hoping for funny, crazy.
I will get on stage on Broadway and I will reenact the rantings of Charlie Sheen one day.
Think you can replace me with some other guy? Go ahead. It won't be the same.
'Tis mightiest in the mightiest.
Do not bring Shakespeare into this.
You're so smart.
Oh, really? Well, so are you.
And yes, the rumors are true. They smoke, they drink, they use bad language in mixed company. They're extremely rich and they can flash more bling than most posses in this room.
I know exactly who that is. That's the mother that loses every game. That's Kirk Cousins. Get rid of him.
Wow.
Bros, come on. I love you, bros.
Does everybody have to be crazy today?
Now get me, Xavier!
As Carlson clears, it's on the money, Obey Cubell, with Dowd right up the gut on the backhand. He scores! Nick Dowd! Defensively, but then he gave it up. Strome right on in, feeds. Give it go, score! Strome and Ovechkin on the board. Malenstein flexes it ahead. Gets the return from Dowd in the McNugget minute of period three. Malenstein, bump it out wide. Slapper on the way. Score! Deflected in front. The Capitals have a late lead.
And isn't that always nice when that happens? Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Bob Matthews. We are delighted that you are with us. That was action from last Sunday as the Capitals beat the Los Angeles Kings on that late goal there in the final minute of the game. Coming up in just a few minutes, the second part of the show, we are going to talk Commanders because there is a lot of news there as well. Ron Rivera is out as head coach. And as we speak, Josh Harris is conducting interviews for a new director of football operations, whether that's going to be a president, a general manager, whatever the title may be. We're going to talk with Craig Hoffman from the Team 980 in D.C. He, of course, has a podcast as well with Logan Paulson. I promise you, Craig will provide us with some really good insight there. But first, we got to start by dropping some pucks. And that 4-3 win last Sunday was a huge one for the Capitals. So as we stand here today, Caps still just outside of the second wild card spot. They are tied in points with the New Jersey Devils. Devils have a couple of more regulation wins than the Caps do. The Devils are 21-15-2. The Caps 19-13-6. Each team with 44 points, but of course, only 5 points separates second place in the Metro from that second and final playoff spot. Now, this is a pretty big stretch that the Caps have coming up. They've got this homestand that they are on right now. They have been off since Sunday, since that win, and they get back on the ice on Thursday. After that, they got a home game on Sunday, and then it's back on the road. So here is the way the schedule looks right now. Seattle comes in on Thursday night, and the Kraken are red hot right now. Then the Rangers on Saturday afternoon, then the second part of that home-and-home with New York on Sunday afternoon. After that, it's back home to play Anaheim and St. Louis before hitting the road pretty much for the rest of the month. Was an impressive win, though. The Kings are a playoff team right now in the Western Conference. More importantly, that win, and a gutsy one that it was, came on the heels of two really bad losses where they gave up 6 goals to the Devils and then 6 goals to the Hurricanes. So they really, really needed that win. And, you know, again, this is a tough stretch because even though it's at home, Seattle red hot right now and the Rangers are the best team in the Metro. That was a huge win for the Caps. Into the locker room after the game, we talked with Dylan Strome about it, and Stromer pretty much echoed the same feelings. It was good to have a game where The Caps, even though they won it by one goal, at least it wasn't a 1-0 or 2-1 game.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, we haven't had one of those games in a while where it felt like, you know, we kind of all came together. And you know, we had so many of them in the first, you know, I don't know, 25 games maybe in the last 10 or so. I feel like kind of got away from us in the third period. They haven't been great. And we get a crappy bounce like that on the penalty kill and happens to go in. And then fourth line was unbelievable all game. So credit to them. They got the ice time tonight and they deserved it. They you know, not only just did they get the goals, but they got the chances too. They are great defensively, and not enough good things to say about them. They're you know, really good line and hard to play against.
As far as the Caps lines, we know, you know, we've talked about it almost all season, and that's that Anthony Mantha, Connor McMichael line, along with Alexi Protas, has probably been the most productive overall. But it was interesting and possibly encouraging to see this, see what Spencer Carberry did. Switching up this line with Strome, putting Strome on the top line midway through the game with Ovechkin and Max Pacioretty. Pacioretty just coming back and starting to get his sea legs back. Been very, very encouraging how he's played since coming back. It's going to be interesting to see if going forward we're going to see these three as the line and maybe drop Kuznetsov down to the third line, centering that. Very interesting indeed. If, and again, you know, off to a good start with Pacioretty and Ovechkin providing the assist to Stromer on that goal. Stromer said that he likes skating with those two as well.
A bit about it because he said, you know, he's not used to typically playing the right side, but thought it might be a little easier in the D zone with how hard they were pinching. So, you know, he's a great player. He can adjust on the fly. He's been around for a long time and fun to play with those guys. We were hunting pucks down, probably had five or six good chances in the third and didn't give up too much. So, with the way things were going and you know, coach gives you extra shift there. You try to take advantage of it and try to get out there and do something. And Patch made a great turnover and when you're playing with a guy like he knows the offensive instincts of the game and gave me an open net. So it was a great play.
It was a good play. Be very, again, very interesting to see how this all shakes out the next two or three weeks as we head into the All-Star break. And once again, Capitals Thursday night at home at Capital One Arena against the Seattle Kraken. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Craig Hoffman from the Team 980 in D.C. joins us. We are talking Commanders and the new world that we find ourselves in. Ron Rivera is out. Who happens to be in? We'll discuss who it might be coming up next. It's the Bob Matthews Podcast right here on the Hockey Podcast Network. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice, including an Ovi slap shot. Now, this week, customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. And it doesn't matter what you want to bet. You want to bet the total number of goals scored in the Capitals Kraken game? That's fine. You want to bet the line when the Caps take on the Rangers in the home-and-home this weekend? Also fine. You can do that as well. All you got to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL. They'll get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See DKNG.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. H to the Izzo, B to the Izzay,
not guilty. He who does not feel me is not real.
Time to bring him on in, our good friend, Commanders Insider from the Team 980 in Washington, D.C., also hosts the Take Command podcast with Logan Paulson, and it is our good friend Craig Hoffman, who was out there in Ashburn yesterday. Nice to talk to you again, my friend, as always.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Good to be with you.
We were talking before we went on the air, so let's just start with that and recap it a little. It kind of seemed like everything ran pretty smoothly yesterday, and obviously it was no surprise whatsoever that Ron Rivera got let go yesterday, right? I mean, everything ran pretty much as everybody thought it was going to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only surprise would be Bob Myers getting hired to be a part of the search committee and Rick Spielman as well, but especially Bob because he's coming from outside. But in terms of Ron, no surprise, absolutely the correct move. There's literally no argument you can make otherwise. Ron was someone who dealt with a lot of difficult circumstances, and I think on a human level dealt with them well, but as a football coach and as a front office person, as a decision maker, was totally out of his depth. And maybe he could have done any one of the jobs at a better level, but not all of them at once. But at the end of the day, like, you finish 4-13, you draft one Pro Bowler, Chase Young, who you trade away and only makes it as a rookie in your entire 4 years. And that's probably going to get you removed from both the head coaching job and the GM job. And certainly that's where the president job, I should say. And off we go. It really now full throated into the Josh Harris era.
Yeah, and it's funny because you just answered my second question, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, there's going to be this great dichotomy when you talk about Rivera's legacy here, because, like you said, on the human side, it was pretty good, and you know, on the football side, not so good. You've covered a bunch of these type of situations before. What was the difference between Josh Harris coming in and doing this and the number of times that you were there covering it when Dan Snyder was in charge?
In terms of the end, or in terms of kind of the way it went throughout the year?
Just the way it went throughout the year, and then just the general kind of feeling, I guess, as you know, one chapter closes and then the next
gotcha.
One starts.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. In terms of throughout the year, like, Josh Harris was way more hands-off. There's only really one time that it's been reported that he was remotely hands-on. And I would say remotely is actually the right thing there. Lynn Eugene Shen was his human remote, if you will. Obviously, at the trade deadline, they made an organizational decision heavily driven by, and when people think analytics in football, they think about like going for it on fourth down. And some people get it twisted that, and you know, analytics say go for it on every fourth down. It's like, that's not what it says. Even when they tell you should go for it, it's not saying 100% of the time. But that's a whole different discussion. Point is, like, when you look at the roster building and some of the data and advanced looks at how teams do that, it was very obvious you needed to trade Chase Young and trade Montez Sweat at the deadline. They knew on the football side, and even Eugene Shen and Josh Harris, I'm sure, would acknowledge like that was not going to be good for the 2023 Commanders, but they made an organizational decision with the long view. And that's something that like Rivera probably would not have done in previous years. They probably would have just eaten it and said, we're trying to win right now. We're not that far off of 500. We can make a run at this. You convince yourselves. And I think the overarching optimism that Rivera has definitely was a huge problem for him, because it made him ignore obvious problems because he thought they would get fixed. So I think Harris being hands-off versus Snyder being hands-on and meddling. Our guy Ben Standig wrote a great story in The Athletic this morning talking about some of the ways that Snyder, even in Rivera's time, maybe he was less involved than in previous administrations, but he did get involved in the quarterback situation in 2021 or 22 when they brought in Carson Wentz. He rejected the proposed plan of signing Mitch Trubisky and drafting someone because he didn't want Trubisky. He wanted a name. And that pushed them to pay way more for Carson Wentz than they otherwise would have. But still, Ron's the one who, you know, was like, Wentz can do it. And the optimism, again, of what he used to be outweighed the reality of what he was at the time. So I think that is probably the biggest difference in season. And also, you know, Josh was a man of his word. He told Ron he had the season and he gave him the entire season. And I commend him for that. And I think it helps him draw a contrast of him versus a David Tepper, who is seen as this rash, you know, constantly changing his mind decision maker. And so all in all, what that leads to is a lot of positivity moving forward. I think this is the best job on the market for a coach that wants to build something. I kind of think if you want to win now, you can't really compete with Justin Herbert in LA. It's just hard to say like, oh yeah, would you like a blank slate or a top seven young quarterback on a contract that's like a lot of money, but will age well because that's how quarterback contracts work.
Right.
I'd rather take LA and figure out the rest because quarterback's the hardest thing to figure out. But if you want to build something as an organization, if you want the fan support, if you want great ownership, if you want all of the things that I would want as a head coach, I think you now look at Washington from it used to be the worst job available, no matter when it was available, because Snyder was the owner, to the best job available in large part because of Josh Harris.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. When you look at the list, and obviously, you know, yesterday was all about they've cast the net wide, and we've heard them try to, you know, get permission or try to get permission, request permission for just about every name out there. Is there anybody on the list that you look at and you say, if somebody wants a blank slate, this is the guy that's going to work best with a blank slate to come in and build something from the ground up?
I mean, this is not an original answer or unique answer, I should say, but like I'm big on the Ben Johnson bandwagon. I think he's got the it factor from what I've been told, kind of that thing you want from a head coach in terms of leadership. And I think what I like most about him and what he's built in Detroit is he's built it without an elite quarterback. Now, let's not get it twisted. Jared Goff's really good. He was a 1-1 overall. He was a top pick in an NFL draft. That involves immense amount of talent. Jared's an elite thrower of the football. He's big. He sees the field. He doesn't always make the best decisions, but Jared's a very, very good football player and a pretty dynamic leader. But he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Peyton Manning. Like, he's not going to the Hall of Fame. He's not Matthew Stafford, the guy he replaced in Detroit. And there's a reason the Rams made that move, and it had something to do with age and readiness at the time, but like Stafford's on a different level than Goff, but they built a top five offense around Goff. And that's really impressive to understand football as an 11-man game offensively, to understand where you need to have your balance of strengths and weaknesses, to understand how to cover up certain deficiencies and especially a quarterback, and to understand kind of this schematic advantages you have of being strategic a certain way, AKA if you run the football a certain amount, you're going to get certain looks. And that's going to allow you an easier time in the passing game. Something Eric Bieniemy, I think, you know, really ignored this year. That to me is most appealing, because the other alternative is like, yeah, you could get a great head. Like if you hire a defensive head coach and you get an A+ quarterback, you're set. Like, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to say it doesn't matter who your OC is, but it matters way less because your quarterback can cover up for a lot. Unless you're going to just hit a home run on quarterback, then I'd rather have someone like Johnson who knows how to win around that as you continue to look for the home run at quarterback, or maybe even win with a really, really good but not great quarterback that is surrounded by a good ecosystem that is sustainable over time.
And that brings us obviously to the next $64,000 question. And I want to couch it, excuse me, in terms of this. You and Logan, I know you guys watch a huge amount of tape together. You talk a lot. So, you know, when you guys look at things, where do you guys, from the point of view of someone who has studied and covered this team for a long time and a former NFL player, where do you guys think the best avenue of success is then? Is it use that top two pick on, you know, a left tackle, or is it to take one of the first two quarterbacks in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to how much you like the quarterback. Obviously, if you love one of these quarterbacks, it's the easiest thing in the world. Stay put, take them. I think where it becomes a little hairier is, let's say Caleb Williams is the guy. but you don't want to trade up, or the Patriots, like, you're willing to trade up, but not as much as the Patriots are. And they'll give up three firsts, and you're just like, I'm not doing that. We have too many holes in the roster. That is a strategy that barely ever works. And so Caleb Williams is the only tier one quarterback in the draft is off the board for you. And you really don't think there's that much of a difference between Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, JJ McCarthy, that you're pretty confident if you go down to 6, 7, 8, 9 in this draft that you can get one of those guys. And especially because your slate's so blank roster wise, even the style doesn't matter. Like, you know, Drake May and Jaden Daniels are very different quarterbacks, but you don't need to pick one stylistically over the other. If you have this blank of a slate and you have a coordinator who's willing to be a little bit flexible. So at that point, can you kind of maximize the pick by trading back and either taking one of those other quarterbacks, or even if you think like Penix now after a national championship game that wasn't that great last night, is going to drop to the second, but overall you actually don't think he's that different than Drake May, and you can get him with the fourth pick of the second round and take an elite left tackle. Like, it's just about maximizing the value of the pick, which I know is incredibly broad. And I think as we get closer to the draft, we'll have a much better feel on what we think that is. What if one of these quarterbacks stands out, or if, you know, we think Olufoshanu or Joe Alt, the left tackles, are just total game changers. I think you have to address quarterback, but building an ecosystem around the quarterback schematically, personnel wise, et cetera, that fits is the most important thing. I think kind of where we sit, the way we see team building and all that kind of stuff. And the other thing, Bob, that I think we've kind of really honed in on the last even 2 weeks, as we've been kind of thinking about this more and listening to some different folks, and Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks brought this up on their podcast, is just like, how do you build a culture of toughness? Because the schematics of the league change: run, pass, 3-4, 4-3, heavy nickel personnel, heavy personnel, spreads, like all these things change. The one thing that doesn't ever change is teams that are really tough win, and that's mentally and physically. And so how do you go about building a culture of toughness? And I'm not talking about like fake machismo. I'm talking real fortitude, and real like physical play strength toughness. The kind of thing that every week when you play the Commanders and then you leave the game, if you're the opponent, you're like, damn, I am sore. That game sucked. I hated playing them, win or loss. That was miserable. That's the kind of culture you want to build. And so who are the players at the top of this draft that embody that? That's what I want to know.
Good point. I never thought about it like that, really. Having said that, then, where do we stand on Sam Howell? You guys watch him live. You go up, watch him on the All 22 tape. I mean, has the ship sailed there? Are there just things that you see that you say you can't ignore this? And guy might be a good career backup, but he can't be your franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I tend to go that direction. Like, I don't know. There's a piece of me that still believes in Sam Howell because I just love the kid's makeup. Like, mentally, he's tough. He's resilient. He's smart. He works really hard. He gets it. I think some quarterbacks give quarterback speak answers and they're kind of doing a bit. They're kind of acting. I think just that way of thinking comes naturally to him. The team first, you know, do my job, take the blame, deflect credit, like stuff that really is good from a leadership standpoint. I think that stuff comes really naturally to him. So there's a part of me that still believes in him, and that if he was put in a Jared Goff-esque situation, that he could develop. But there are a couple problems that I think are just, you're glossing over if you go too far down that road. I think the height thing is an issue. There's a reason most quarterbacks are bigger than him, and he just doesn't see the middle of the field well. Now, are there ways to overcome it? In New Orleans for 20 years, they had elite guard play, so the pocket was a little bit more solid for Drew Brees, and Drew saw the field at 6 feet tall just fine. If you want to do that, you have to make intentional choices about who your offensive line is. So to build around Howell, I think it's probably better to just, you know, get someone who sees the field better, whether that's a height thing or just like a, you know, his vision and mental processing is not quite up to speed thing. I think that's a huge issue. I think decision-making at times has been an issue. And I think he really struggles with marrying his, or like kind of keeping his feet under control. And there's so many times you could watch this, even as a casual fan who's not super locked in on quarterback footwork. You watch other quarterbacks and there's kind of a 1-2-3 balls out, 1-2-3 hitch balls out, 1-2-3-4-5 balls out. And for him, it'd be like 1-2 stand there, throw. And you have this like awkward rhythm to the game when he would be in there sometimes when he wasn't really locked in, and I don't say like he's not locked in mentally, but when he's not feeling it, when he's not in that flow state. And I think that was who he was in college. It's who he was in high school. And to think that he's going to get to the highest level with the toughest competition and figure that out with the consistency you need to win is a that's a tough ask. And I would rather I think it's smart to just try to find someone who's better at it rather than trying to fix that with him.
Right. I like that. That makes a lot of sense. So again, you know, when we look down the road here, we're not even going to have a sense of which way they're going to go until, as Josh Harris said, they're going to hire a GM. If everything works out perfectly, hire a GM, let the GM pick the coach, unless the coaching carousel just gets too hot, right?
Right, exactly. That is, I think that was a really interesting quote from Josh Harris yesterday when he was basically like, I will be flexible for talent, which is we're not setting any hard and fast rules, because if we love a head coach and that guy wants a little bit of personnel control or this or that, like we're not locked into certain things. We don't have two square pegs that we are two round holes that we're trying to fill. And thus we don't need exactly round pegs. If we fall in love with the square peg, we'll make a square hole. And right. That's really smart. And that also includes the timelines. I would think that they're like it, this stuff isn't black and white though, Bob, as you know, like when they talk to the GM candidates, they're going to ask them who are some of the people on their radar for head coach. Who is there anybody you have relationships? Is there anybody you'd really want to work with? Whose work do you admire? And so if all of a sudden they're interviewing Adam Peters, the assistant general manager in San Francisco, and he's got three names, and he's like, by the way, I know everyone loves Ben Johnson, but that guy sucks. I hate him. And I don't think that's going to happen. I would imagine those two see football very similarly and would get along great. But let's just pretend for the sake of pretending, right? He's like, I know everyone loves Ben Johnson. That guy sucks. They're not going to hire both of them. Right. And if they fall in love with Ben Johnson, they're either not going to go Adam Peters, or they're going to say, look, Adam Peters is our guy, and we're not going to do that. So they'll have an understanding of, hey, we have to go hire the head coach first. And maybe we're making a decision between three general manager candidates, but all three of those GM candidates like that head coach, and that head coach needs an answer now because Atlanta's offering him a contract that he's got to say yes or no to by tomorrow. And we want him to say yes to our contract. So from a flexibility standpoint, that's how I would imagine it would go. At least that's how I hope it would go. And unlike the previous administration, Bob, I actually believe these people are smart and would do that and have that due diligence already done.
And at least they didn't get the holiday wrong at the beginning of the press conference yesterday.
That's true. That's true. He just went into it. No well wishes. I don't think he said a happy new year, but if he did, it was a happy new year and it was not memorable, as opposed to whatever Dan did.
Exactly. All right. Last question before I let you go. Timeline wise, what are we thinking? When are we thinking we might hear about a head coach or a GM, either interviews or maybe even making a decision?
Yeah. So you'll start getting interviews with the GM folks pretty immediately. In fact, on Tuesday and Wednesday, they're going to talk to the Chiefs assistant GM, whose name is totally escaping me. I think it's Mike Borgonzi. I think Borgonzi is the last name. Mike, if your name's not Mike, I apologize. I promise I'll get it right if you're hired, or honestly, whenever I look it up, because now this is going to haunt me and I'm going to look it up as soon as this podcast is over. But they're also going to talk to Peters, which is amazing. He turned down multiple interviews last year, but this first round is really virtual interviews. For the GMs, it doesn't have to be. So they're actually in Miami with Borgonzi right now, from some reporting from reporters this morning. And they will interview a bunch of people. They do obviously have to satisfy the Rooney Rule, which would involve two minority candidates, whether that is people of color, whether that is a woman or a female candidate. And there are a couple of really impressive female candidates out there. Catherine Raich from the Browns, Donna Ponte from the NFL offices has been mentioned as well. So we'll see kind of those interviews, I would say, over the next week. And I would imagine they try to have that person in, you know, the next 1 to 2 weeks. Like I think the phrase that Harris used yesterday was like thorough but rapid. So yep. They will do the interviews as fast as they can, make decisions, eliminate people / move other people to second round of candidacy. They'll probably bring those second round candidates into Ashburn and say, hey, like let's really hammer this out. And then from there, you're kind of working on the head coach thing. The head coach thing is a little more complicated because there are rules dictating who can and can't talk and when based off of their current roles. So if you're a team that's in the playoffs, which most of the candidates obviously are, you can only do virtual interviews until the 22nd of January. And there's select windows when those can happen. And then you can do in-person interviews after that. And again, obviously same thing applies, Rooney Rule, et cetera. There are a number of African-American candidates that they've already identified as wanting to talk to, including Raheem Morris, including Aaron Glenn. I think there's a few others as well. They have a pretty exhaustive list. So that's not going to be an issue. And they're going to search far and wide to make sure they get the best person, no matter who they are, what they look like, where they come from. So I don't think that's going to be an issue here at all. And so I would imagine, ideally for them, Senior Bowl week, they can hire someone and have that person be their representative and go down and scout for the Commanders. The trouble you run into is if, you know, let's say again, to use my guy, Ben Johnson's the guy and the Lions make the Super Bowl, you're kind of stuck till they're done. And so that's the one catch up, is that end of January Senior Bowl, which is the big first scouting event, which I would definitely want to have my GM in by then. But if not my head coach as well, you gotta hope that, you know, hey, wish you luck, but also I wish that you're here as soon as possible, so that we can officially hire you, because you can't hire someone until they're done with their current job.
Yeah, very true. Funny aside real quick about the Senior Bowl. I went to high school in Mobile. My dad was actually on the Senior Bowl committee, and he got rid of the god-awful red blazer that they gave everybody. I wished he'd have saved that. The thing is completely hideous and just a total bowl game thing.
That's funny.
Yeah. Oh, it was
great story.
It's, you know, this, and the Senior Bowl back then, it was, you know, the social event that kicked off Mardi Gras down there in Mobile. And it wasn't right. Even half of what it is now. So
yeah,
you going down for that?
No, I don't think I will this year, unfortunately. That was my favorite event when I was on the beat. I liked that more than the combine. I liked that more than anything else because the access you got and kind of the intimacy of Mobile, some great restaurants down there. It was always a fun couple of days. So I miss going down there, but I don't think that will fit in my travel schedule. And they don't pay me to go on those trips anymore because now I sit in the studio and blab my opinions for 3 hours a day.
There you go. Did the Isaiah Trail Maids still show up in the Annabellan dresses at the Senior Bowl?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar, but maybe.
It's incredibly politically incorrect now, but we are talking about Mobile, so I'm just not sure. I could see it happening. I really could.
Yeah. some traditions don't die as fast as they need to.
No, especially down there. All right, before we get out of here, Craig, tell everybody where can they find you?
Yeah, we're on the Team 980 every afternoon starting at 4 p.m., which you can listen to on the free Odyssey app. You can also stream our show live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well, and then the Take Command podcast at anywhere you get your pods.
Sounds good. Craig Hoffman, Team 980 in D.C. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you.
It's going to do it for us. Look at the clock on the wall. Say, we got to get the heck out of here. We will keep you up to date on all of the Commanders' hirings going on here in the next week to 10 days. And next time we talk to you, recap a very big three-game swing for the Capitals at home against Seattle and the Rangers, and then on the road at Madison Square Garden. Have a good one, everybody. Remember, like a wise man once said, if you're out of your bike tonight, as always, do wear white. And taste. I've been around for a long, long year. So many a man's soul to faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. What's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for change.